Welcome back to the program. We live in a culture where victimhood is often embraced, usually because we seem to lack internal motivation. We look to it to galvanize our actions, sometimes even violent ones. But why is this culture of victimhood so pervasive now? Perhaps it springs from early Christian myth of martyrdom and the degree to which that Christian mythology and those who subscribe to it are trying to shape our politics and our culture. This is the heart of a brilliant and provocative new book by my guest, Notre Dame University professor, Candida Moss. Candida Moss is professor of New Testament and Early Christianity at the University of Notre Dame. She's a graduate of Oxford and Yale and an award-winning author of numerous scholarly works. It is my pleasure to welcome Candida Moss here to talk about the myth of persecution. Candida Moss, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you here. This is no small matter dealing with this idea of martyrdom and that it represented 300 years of Christianity. This is a major shift in order for Christian theology to accept this. Talk a little about that.
Right. It really is a big shift. This is the story that Christians or anyone who grows up in a Christian society hears, that early Christians were persecuted by the Romans, that they were hounded and sought out and dragged out of their homes to be tortured and killed just because of their faith in Jesus. And you still hear about it today. You hear about it in political rhetoric, Rick Santorum, Mitt Romney. Many Republican candidates spoke about the war on Christianity or how Christians were persecuted in modern-day America. Just yesterday, Rick Santorum talked about the forces that are aligning against Christians in America and against his values. So this is really deeply ingrained in how Christians think about themselves today. We think about ourselves as a religion sort of forged in conflict that has become victorious, but that somehow paradoxically, even though Christians are the dominant religious group in Western Europe and in America, Christians still think about themselves as essentially persecuted and under attack and somehow having to defend themselves against this kind of unseen onslaught.
Talk about it in the period between this period of contemporary American politics and culture wars that you're talking about and the original mythology and what has happened in between, the degree to which this mythology has been used repeatedly. It's not just something of contemporary nature, but has been used repeatedly as a way to reinforce Christian theology.
Right, this is really intriguing. So we can see that after the rise of Constantine in the 4th century and the Roman Empire essentially becoming Christian, that's when we see the explosion in literature pertaining to martyrs. More than 95% of the stories about early Christian martyrdom are written after early Christian martyrdom ceases to exist. And when we look at those texts, we can see people changing those stories in the way that modern Americans might use the founding fathers and their motivations to make an argument about how we should live today. Later Christians, powerful Christians, used early Christian martyrdom to make arguments about excluding heretics or who should be bishop. Or in the case of Pope Urban II, who called the First Crusade, he used martyrdom to persuade European rulers and their troops that they should go to war with the Ottoman Empire. So martyrdom is something that comes up repeatedly in this period of really Christian victory and triumph in order to justify wars, to exclude heretics, to sort of institutionalize Orthodox Christianity, and even sometimes to decide who should be the next leader of a Christian church.
When we look at it today, to what extent does the real persecution that we see in places like the Middle East and China enter into the equation? Because those are the things that contemporary Christians often cite as a way to justify contemporary martyrdom.
Yes, and I think it's really important that we recognize that there are people who are suffering, not just Christians, of course, but there are Christians suffering in other parts of the world, enduring real persecution. But when we use the same language of persecution to describe what's happening in the Middle East or China, as we use to describe what's happening in America, we're basically conflating those two situations or those multiple situations. And the effect isn't so much to draw attention to what happens in other parts of the world as to sort of beef up our own credentials as a persecuted group. So the effect of that is actually to colonize those experiences around the world and to use them to sort of add to our own rhetoric. It's rare that references to persecution in other parts of the world actually lead people to focus on the situations there. Usually what happens is that we end up cannibalizing and overshadowing those experiences with our own very shrill claims that we're persecuted. And you can see that in the media. So, for example, on a day that Newt Gingrich in 2012 said that he was running as a candidate for the Republican nominee for president because there was a war against Christianity, that same day there was this news report of 35,000 Christians being driven out of their homes in Africa. That news report about what was happening to all of those Christians in Africa never got any media airtime because it was completely overshadowed by Newt Gingrich's claims that he was working on behalf of a persecuted group.
One of the things we've seen over and over again, and this transcends Christianity, it even transcends religion, is that victimhood and martyrdom has been used repeatedly in a historical context for people to justify themselves and to often silence dissent.
That's right. It does. It justifies violence. What's interesting is that before Christianity, before the rise of Christianity, if a group was persecuted, they interpreted that persecution religiously as a sign that their gods were angry with them. Other people saw it as a sign that a particular group's gods weren't that powerful. So people didn't see it as, you couldn't have said to an ancient Roman, we're persecuted, and just left it at that. No one would have understood that as a claim. And when ancient Jews were persecuted by the Greeks, they actually told them that they were suffering for their own sins. So Christianity and Christian persecution and martyrdom really changed the way people think about persecution. Prior to Christianity, it was a sign that your God was angry with you. After the rise of Christianity, it was used to justify violence.
And of course, coming back to the point you made earlier, today it's used to justify the war against the secular world and what Christians see as hostility towards them today.
That's right. People talk about secularism as if they're sort of a military army supporting secularism, orchestrating this fight against Christians. It assumes that we're really in a struggle for survival and that there are two groups and they're attacking us. And when you look at the evidence, it seems hard to sustain that claim. There really isn't that kind of organization. And what Christians really need to be doing is explaining themselves and trying to persuade people rather than just claiming that they're under attack by secularism and liberalism.
Has it gotten to a point, though, after all these decades, centuries almost of this, that in fact it's very difficult to separate out this martyrdom myth from the very justification and idea of Christianity today?
Yeah, it is really hard because, of course, Christianity is founded on this iconic example of the crucifixion, of an innocent sufferer dying even though he clearly didn't deserve it. So it is sort of part of the Christian psyche. I do think that if we look at the historical evidence, if we see how this idea was shaped, then we'll realize why it is that we're wedded to this understanding of conflict. And perhaps we'll also realize that we don't have to be, that it is possible to separate ourselves from this and to say, as Christians, we're committed to imitating Jesus, to the What Would Jesus Do movement. But just because we're willing to suffer like Christ doesn't mean that there's some other group out to get us. I don't think that's something necessary.
Of course, the point you're making is that the other side of that Christianity, which is really the social justice movement within Christianity, has to really be in the ascendancy in order for this mythology to take a back seat.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. You really have to focus on the instructions to love others, the interest in people other than yourself. And that's what really is going to defer this interest in persecution and this mythology about I myself am under attack if social justice rises to the fore. I think that's what we'll see.
To what extent do you think that this is responsible in some way for the overall culture of victimhood that is so much a part of contemporary society today?
Well, there are obviously other historical factors that contribute to it. I think the rise of psychology is very important too. But I think essentially had it not been for Christianity, if it had not been for this mythology of persecution in the early church, people wouldn't be able to claim that they were victims as sort of a sign of power. That wouldn't have been a badge of honor in modern society.
Of course, the idea that martyrdom itself is so enduring is also part of this as well, that there's so much historical precedent for the success of martyrdom and for those that have been martyred who have to have their ideas transcend them, that it's very compelling.
It is compelling. I originally got into the study of early Christian martyrdom because I was one of those people who found these stories just profoundly inspiring. It's really compelling to read stories about people who are willing to give up their lives for something greater than themselves. But I would say people aren't always and everywhere persecuted. And that's sort of what the mythology is. It's sort of linked to the Bible. And what you tend to hear Christians say is that Jesus predicted they would be persecuted, and they were. And that, in fact, is just not the case.
It's interesting to look at martyrdom as the difference between killing and suicide, essentially. One involves true martyrdom, the other is a justification for external violence.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, when people talk about martyrdom today, they say that Christians were never suicidal. Christians would never do something like that. And that wasn't true. The interest in suicide, and in fact, this is really fascinating to see how the history of martyrdom really is part of the history of suicide. They're sort of linked together. So before the 4th century, suicide was very well respected by the Romans. If you had brought shame on your family, you would commit suicide, and that would be a way to redeem yourself. But with the rise of Christianity, Christians began to sort of push suicide away and to discredit it, largely because of Christian schismatic groups who did practice suicidal martyrdom, and also to discourage women from committing suicide after rape. So when we think about suicide, we're really looking at a discussion that took place in the early church about why suicide was wrong. But until that point in time, lots of people, including Christians, thought it was perfectly respectable.
Talk a little bit about the pushback that you have gotten from Christian groups to these ideas.
Yeah, obviously this is unpopular. This is a really deeply cherished idea. Certainly I've gotten a lot of letters from people insisting I resign from Notre Dame or, you know, sort of aligning me with Satan. There's something ironic about getting a letter from someone saying that I'm persecuting Christians when the whole point of my book is not to claim that you're persecuted over little things. There is a lot of pushback, but I think what that shows is that people care about this idea and that it's important that we focus on it and look at the evidence and see what's out there. We can't understand ourselves in this way.
Talk a little bit about the origins of this early mythology and how it really came to be.
Well, when we try to understand where does this idea that we're constantly persecuted come from, it starts to begin in the 4th century, and there are a couple of reasons. One is the birth of something we call the cult of the saints. This is exactly what Luther complained about in the Reformation. And there were these wealthy pilgrims going around visiting shrines associated with Jesus, associated with the apostles and the martyrs. So if you were an enterprising young priest in a small town and you wanted to bring some of that wealth to your city, then you would write down the story of someone, maybe a local hero, maybe they were rumored to have died, but you didn't really know the details, and you would write a martyrdom story. Sometimes you would brand them by incorporating elements of the local economy. So if you're in a town well known for wine, you would have the Mata drinking that wine so that when the pilgrims came, they would want to drink the wine too. So it was a way to boost the local economy, and that's how many early Christian martyrdom stories got started. Others were written to denounce heresy. It's tough to get people to stop believing something, but if you can tell them that one of their heroes said that what they believe is wrong, then they'll stop doing it. So that was one of the reasons that this history of martyrdom began, because early Christians were using martyrs and the idea of persecution to combat heresy and to boost this interest in the cult of the saints.
It's used today, as we talked about before, in a political context because it does have the advantage of galvanizing people. It's a marketing concept as much as anything else.
That's right. It is a marketing concept, and it's tremendously effective. The problem is once you use this language of war, you sort of sound this alarm and spur people into action. It's very hard to say to them, just kidding, it was a metaphor. Now let's have a discussion.
To what extent is this so deeply inculcated in Christian dogma today that it really becomes, you know, a new aspect of the religion? It's not something that's ever going to be successfully teased out.
That's certainly a risk. There is a famous 19th century historian who said that the history of Christianity is the history of martyrdom. So to some extent, can we ever get rid of this? Maybe not. And I would say perhaps we don't want to. A lot of people find these stories inspirational and helpful for them, you know, when they're sick or grieving. But at the same time, we really need to address the ways that our ideas use power to harm others. And when you talk about persecution, you are calling someone else a persecutor. You're aligning them with the devil, and you're justifying all kinds of violence against them.
Candida Moss, her book is The Myth of Persecution, How Early Christians Invented a Story of Martyrdom. Candida, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it.